I'm told the minhag is that after the topic is advertised, the Rebbe gets up and says, yeah, I didn't really know about that topic, so I'm going to just talk about whatever I want to talk about. So if I could just, in keeping with the minhag, I knew it was supposed to be about brachas, because you learned brachas. I didn't realize it was supposed to be about like what a bracha is all about. So maybe just a word or two about that, and then we'll move on to other things. Okay, just a word or two about that. There, if you're learning brachos, you know, how many guys are shanal here? Okay, so you're cold. I get it. All right, if you're learning brachos, so you know that there are different types of brachos. There are birchas hanedin, there are birchas hamitzvos, and it could be that the idea of the different brachos is different for each one. But just two thoughts about the impact and the import of brachos in general. One thought that just comes to mind. As Rabbi Elmalai was speaking, and I realized I have to talk about the importance of brachos, one thought that comes to mind is Rav Soloveitchik used to point out that when you have a mitzvah that for whatever reason doesn't get a bracha. Now, saying a bracha on a mitzvah is always it's a derabanan. There's no chiyuv d'oraisa to say a bracha on a mitzvah. It's only midrabanan. And a mitzvah can be fulfilled midrashah. What happens if you take lulav and you don't say a bracha? Do you get the mitzvah d'oraisa? Yeah, you get the mitzvah. So you just didn't say the bracha. You miss out on the bracha midrabanan. So they just pointed out that it's so interesting that if you look at those mitzvahs, that for whatever reason the bracha was taken away, people are always mezalzel in those mitzvahs. Missing the bracha, people end up ignoring the mitzvah entirely. You know where we have this? Where do we have a case where really normally there is a bracha, but for whatever reason, in certain circumstances, there's no bracha, and then just people, they do away with the whole mitzvah. They forget the whole mitzvah. So they, yeah? Ah, Sfiras HaOmer. The halacha is that Sfiras HaOmer, Bizman HaZeh, is a mitzvah drabanan that we do. It's a machlokas rishonim. We pass in Sfiras HaOmer as a mitzvah drabanan. There's a machlokas rishonim if a person forgets one night of Sfira, whether he still has a mitzvah to continue counting the other nights. We paskin la halacha me'ikra din, that he does have a mitzvah to count the other nights, because each night is an independent mitzvah. So of course he has a mitzvah to continue counting every other night. But to be choshesh for the opinion that somehow it's one long mitzvah, and that if you miss a night, that maybe you don't have a chiyuv anymore, to be choshesh for that opinion, we say, Shulchan Aruch says, so you continue to count, but without a bracha. And what do most people do the second they miss one night of Sfira? They stop counting entirely. I'm out of it. So they stop counting entirely. They're missing out on the mitzvah d'Rabbanan, according to some Rishonim, the mitzvah d'Oraisa, the rest of the nights, which we paskin, they're still mechuyev in. Why are they missing out? Why do they give it up? No bracha. Where else do we have something like that? The other case that we have is a Masechta Sukkah. The Gemara discusses whether a person is supposed to sit in Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. You sit in Sukkah in Chutz Laaretz. In Eretz Yisrael, it's Vaday not. You don't sit in Sukkah in Shmini Atzeres in Eretz Yisrael, but in Chutz Laaretz, where you keep 2 days of Yantiv, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that even in, if you're keeping 2 days of Yantiv in Eretz Yisrael, you don't sit in Sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. So Eretz Yisrael, you shouldn't go against the Minigar Yisrael. But when you're in Chutz Laaretz and you're keeping 2 days of Yantiv, you sit in Sukkah, there's a machlokas in the Gemara whether you sit in Sukkah in Shmini Atzeres, and the Gemara says, Vehil Chasad, the halacha is Yesuve Yasvin and Bruch Elam Vrachimah. We sit in the Sukkah, no bracha. We sit in the Sukkah, but we don't say a bracha. So what happens? Every chassid in the world, and most people who aren't chassidim, but just don't like sitting in Sukkah, end up doing away with the whole thing. They don't sit in Sukkah, in Shmini Atzeres anymore. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, probably because once we lost the bracha, people just assumed, the mitzvah doesn't really mean anything anymore. That's the impact that a bracha has. That when we take when we say a bracha on a mitzvah, then it makes us take the mitzvah more seriously, because it gives us pause. It gives us a moment to think about the mitzvah. You know, there's a famous tshuva in the Noda Behuda. Someone asked the Noda Behuda once, actually two tshuvas in the Noda Behuda. Someone asked the Noda Behuda what the proper text of l'shem yichud is. You know, when you say like l'shem yichud before Sfiras HaOmer, before putting on tefillin, it's printed in the Siddur to say l'shem yichud, kutsh baruch hu, whatever, to prepare yourself for. And the Noda Behuda's response, anyone know the Noda Behuda's response to this? Do anyone say l'shem yichud over here? No one says l'shem yichud. So you all pass on the Noda Behuda. So the Noda Behuda's response was, what's the proper nusach of l'shem yichud? What are you talking about? What is l'shem yichud? He said, as far as I could tell, in Shas and Rishonim and Medrash, Rav Yerushalmi, Shulchan Aruch, there is no l'shem yichud. because Chassidim made up a new tefillah that he says, I don't really get it. So the other people write, oh, so you're going to tell me that, no, there's a reason you should say L'Shem Yichud. The reason you should say L'Shem Yichud is that when you do a mitzvah, when you do something to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should do it b'machshava, b'maisa, u'bedibur, that we should do it with everything we've got. We should do it with action, with speech, and with machshava. So we do it with machshava when we do a mitzvah. Mitzvah trichos kavana. So we have kavana for the mitzvah. We do it b'maisa, because we're going to do the mitzvah. We'll eat the matzah, we'll pick up the lulav, we'll do. And where's the dibur? So you're going to tell me, oh, I need l'shem yichud in order to do the dibur? Says the Nodeb Yehuda, that's what a birchas mitzvah is for. That's what the Ritva writes. He quotes a Ritva. That's what a birchas mitzvah is for. It's to throw ourselves completely into the mitzvah, to commit to the mitzvah. That's the idea of a birchas mitzvah. This idea, just parenthetically, of machshava, maisa, and dibur, the Chayei Adam writes, it's important to know, this is a year that you guys are away from your parents most of the time. This is around the time of year, probably just was the time of year most of your parents, many of your parents may have visited. By Kibbut Aveim, Chayei Adam writes, that a person is supposed to fulfill Kibbut Aveim b'machshava, b'dibur, b'maisa. So, how do you fulfill Kibbut Aveim b'dibur? What do you do? There's no bracha. How do you fulfill Kibbut Aveim b'dibur? Call them. Is that Scott? Call them, speak nicely to them. I miss having a cheer, Scott. It kind of comes to the end. So, you call them, you speak nicely to them, you speak respectfully to them, right? How do you fulfill b'maisa with action?
Bring them things.
Bring them things. Gemara Kedushin. You can give them to eat, give them to drink, you can get them dressed if they need help. If they don't need help getting dressed, they tend to get offended when you help them to get dressed. I was helping my grandfather, who's 89 years old. I went to visit him the other day in Rehovot. So I went to Daf Yomi Shir with him. Tell me the Rav gives the best Daf Yomi Shir in his shul. I'm like, hey. No, but so I went to the Daf Yomi Shir with him, and afterwards it was pouring outside. So afterwards I was helping. He was putting on his coat, so I was helping him put on his coat. He says, "Stop it! Wait, that could wait till I get old. Not now." He's 89 years old. So what was I saying? Oh yeah. So b'maisa, you help him get dressed. You help him with his coat. How do you do it b'machshava? Keep it on name b'machshava. It's mind-boggling, not like you're supposed to do the mitzvah fully. It's such an important mitzvah. How do you do machshav? Says the Chayei Adam. Yeah, you have a thought?
I don't know.
No, suggest something. Don't be low on my shalom.
No, I was thinking machshava-wise, like, really understand.
Oh, to understand the mitzvah.
Yeah, understand.
To understand the mitzvah. But do they feel honor when you understand the mitzvah? First of all, also, Rabbi Mori Verabi, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, often says that he was never fully able to fulfill Kibbut Aveim to even a small measure until he had children, because of what you're saying, that you don't really understand the mitzvah until you've given that much to another person, and you've put that much energy and love and tears and everything you put into your children, then you understand the mitzvah. Or begin to understand the mitzvah. So yeah, there is a certain element of that.
So think about like what they gave you.
Oh, so there's certainly an element of Kibbut Aveim, and by the way, it's this expression. There's certainly an element of Kibbut Aveim that is Hakaras HaTov based. That's what the Sefer HaChinuch writes. That's why Minchas Chinuch has a suffix, Kibbut Aveim, Ben Adam L'Chaver, Ben Adam L'Makom. The Ben Adam L'Chaver side is Hakaras HaTov. You have to be Makir Tov to your parents. By the way, in-laws also. Shulchan Aruch says you have to be Mechabed your in-laws. And that's probably not Ben Adam L'Makom. That's got to be Ben Adam L'Chaver, because you have Hakaras HaTov. The most important person in your life was given to you by your in-laws, is here, exists on this earth because of your in-laws. I thought that was pshat in this week's parsha. I'll get it in a second. I realize I'm rambling a little bit over here, but I thought that was pshat in the Rashi in this week's parsha. This doesn't have Rashi. But Rashi in this week's parsha says, oh, I always go right for some reason. My 11th grade cheer, the guys on the right side of the room always do better in 11th grade than the guys on the left side of the room because they feel ignored. I'm always going right. I don't know. I have to learn to go left. On the basketball court, I can go neither. But, okay. It's like I have one of my children is a lefty, one of them, three of them are righties, and one of them is neither. Not really good at anything. I'm not saying much more. Arya can guess. So we're at, so Yisro says, Ani chosem chi Yisro bo'ilech. I, your father-in-law Yisra, I'm coming to you. It's an amazing thing. Rashi says, why is he announcing, you know, blow the trumpets, herald my arrival, I'm coming, Moshe. Says Rashi, im eina teyotze begini, tse begin ishtecha. If you're not going to come to greet for my honor, come for your wife's honor. If you're not going to come for your wife's honor, then at least come for the honor of your children. Chaim Kanievsky points out, and it's really a pashut ha'ara. It's backwards. What's he saying? You want to honor me? Great. If you don't want to honor me, you should honor your wife. If you don't want to honor your wife, you should honor your children. It's backwards. Halach and Shulchan Aruch, Chayiv Adam Kvod Chama. The person has to honor his father-in-law and his mother-in-law. His wife, Rambam writes, Mechabdo Yoser Migufa. It's the right thing. Not a chiyuv, the right thing. If you want to have a happy marriage, which most people want, the right thing is to honor her more than you honor yourself. Children, no chiyuv of honor whatsoever. There's no covenant for your children. So the hierarchy is backwards. So I was thinking about this. I thought that maybe the pshat is that Yisra was saying it's all about me. I want you to honor me. If you're having a hard time figuring out why you should honor me, say begin ishtecha. Remember where your wife comes from. Your wife comes from me. If you're having a hard time figuring out why you should appreciate your wife, after all, you're separated at this point, you know, Moshe was Megarish, Sibara, took about. Yeah, having a hard time figuring out why you should go after your wife, why you need to honor her. What's your whole heritage? What's everything you exist in this world for? Why do you wake up in the morning? It's to pass on the Torah that you're getting from a Kodesh Baruch Hu to the next generation. It's because of your children. It's not the honor that you have for your children, but it's the Hakaras HaTov. So it all starts with Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov to your in-laws. So that's a possibility that B'machshava means to think about being Makir Tov. You wanted to say something else?
Yeah, I think it's much easier to stop yourself from saying or doing something like bad to that goes against Kibud Abim, but everyone gets mad at their parents, and then to have just a bad thought about your parents.
Very often, right. You feel like a hero when you do it. You're thinking bad things about your parents, but I'm not going to say anything. So I must be doing Kibud Avim really well because I'm not saying anything. Says the Chachma Sadam, you're doing a terrible job because you shouldn't be thinking bad things about your parents. Chachma Sadam says exactly that. He says even stronger. Listen to what he says. He says a person has to think of their parents as Gidolei Olam. Now, not everybody's parents are Gidolei Olam. You have to think that your parents are the greatest people in the world. Despite a mountain of evidence that you might have had growing up watching that they don't seem to be Gedolei Olam. No one else seems to think that they're Gedolei Olam. You have to think that they're Gedolei Olam. B'machshava. It's mind blowing. It's like, now you understand a little bit what Abaye was talking about in the Gemara in Kiddushin when Abaye says, it's a good thing that my father died right after I was conceived and my mother died when I was born, because I never would have been able to pass the Nisayan of having proper Kibbut Avayim. What he couldn't do like Rabbi Tarfon did and hold his hands under his mother's feet as she was walking and, you know, get down and let her climb up on his back on the bed, or like the Tosa says about Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Yishmael's mother used to wash his feet, wash the dirt off his feet and then drink the water because she thought he was such a holy man. And he couldn't do all those things. Right, you know that medrash, Rabbi Shmuel? It's crazy, right? She would drink that, and Rabbi Shmuel said, stop it already, it's ridiculous, you can't do that. And he stopped letting her do it. And then she came to the Beis Medrash and complained, my son Yishmael has no Kibbut Avayim. And they're like, wow, Rabbi Shmuel has no Kibbut Avayim, what's going on? And he's like, no, look, she wants to drink the dirt off my feet. They said, you have to let her. If that's what she wants, Ritzono Shel Adam, Zehu Kvodo. Whatever a person wants, that's how we define kavod for that person. Shaft used to say that if his kids would try to like put on his shoes for him, he would say, get away from me. I don't want you to put on my shoes for me. So that's not kavod, because mitzvah shalad is not kavod. It's whatever person wants. So anyway, all of that was just a parenthetical note. The idea of a birchas hamitzvah is that a person throws himself into the mitzvah, commits fully to the mitzvah. On three levels. So the bracha is our dibur commitment. We know mitzvah srichas kavana. We know that we have to do the mitzvah. The dibur commitment to the mitzvah. So that's what Chazal saw in this incredible wisdom. And there's a tremendous psychological basis to this. That when people say things, they start believing them. even if they didn't believe it before they said it. You buy into a position once you say it. So you're buying into the mitzvah. Birchas Hananin, one simple ha'ara about Birchas Hananin. What Birchas Hananin essentially is, the Gemara says that it's also Adam Lanas Vel Nazabli Bracha. You're not allowed to get any hana from this world without a bracha. Everyone has the kasha that there are certain hanas that we don't seem to make a bracha on. But for the most part, you don't get any benefit. The Gemara compares it to Mi'ila Behegdish. Hashem Ha'aretz Umlova, the whole world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Gemara asks Sestira. It says, Hashem Ha'aretz Umlova, the whole world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they have another part, Shemaim, Shemaim, Hashem Ha'aretz Nasal Ibn Adam. The Shemaim is Hashem, the Aretz is ours. You learned this, those guys who are learning Baruch. The Aretz Nasal Ibn Adam. What is it? Lamed Hay or something? So the Gemara asks that Stira. So the Gemara says, Kan Kodem Bracha, Kan Liachar Bracha. Before a bracha, there is it's Hashem Aratum Lo. Once you say a bracha, Hashem gives it to us. Why is Hashem willing to share it with us once we say a bracha? So I think this is what we were just talking about before. It's about Hakaras HaTov. It's about a basic sense of Hakaras HaTov. That if you have Hakaras HaTov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what Hashem is looking for. Just recognize the goodness in life. And this is becoming very, very popular. If anyone is interested in social sciences and psychology, this is becoming a very, very popular notion. Musar Svarim spoke about this for centuries already. This has been going on for a long time in Jewish circles. Now it's like all the rage in the secular psychology world about having Hakaras HaTov. And the reason they think it's so important to have Hakaras HaTov, and it's so true, is that when you have Hakaras, there's a direct link between gratitude and happiness. People who keep gratitude journals, where they write down, that's what they recommend, that you write down three things you're grateful for every single day. Or at least think about three things you're grateful for every single day. It's a great thing to do when you have a Shabbos table with your kids. You know, what are you grateful for that happened this week? Every night should be Thanksgiving. Every Shabbos should be Thanksgiving. What are you grateful for this week? And that breeds happiness. And when a person is happy, a person is able to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. When a person is happy, a person is able to accomplish. There's a great psychologist named Sean Aker. Anyone ever hear of him? Do you have internet access here? Is it wrong to tell you to go online? Okay, when you get home. There's a TED Talk by this fellow named Sean Aker. It's about 12 minutes of your time. It is unbelievable. And what he basically argues on, like really, I don't know, down to like a minute. What he really argues is that for years humanity had the equation backwards. That we thought if you're successful, you accomplish what you want to accomplish, then you'll be happy. Right? We thought that if I want to be a doctor, so when I, do well in my MCATs, I'll be happy. No, then the next time when I do well in medical school, then I'll be happy. When I have my own practice, I'll be happy. And what happens in real life? What happens when you achieve that goal? You set a new goal. You just move the goalpost back. You set a new goal. And the happiness eludes you because you always think, if this. If I won Powerball, I'd be happy. I don't know if you know, there was a huge Powerball jackpot, like $1.5 billion. Recently, it was split by three people. One person came forward, two of them didn't. One of them seems to be an employee of Rechnitz. Whatever, a long whole story in America. But Mark Cuban, you know who that is?
Yeah,
the owner of the Mavericks, sent out, and also from what's the show?
Shark Tank.
Right. So he sent a message to the lottery winners. If you weren't happy yesterday, you're not going to be happy today. He said, if you were happy yesterday, you're probably going to be a little happier. It is nice not to have to worry about money. But my kids asked me, I was walking with a rabbinic colleague and in YU. I teach YU one day a week, and I was walking with one of the other rabbanim there, and he said, just excuse me for a minute, I just want to go into the store to buy a Powerball ticket. I'm like, okay, I'll wait for you. And he's like, aren't you going to come with me? Aren't you going to buy one? No. He said, why not? I said, because Hashem is really nice to me and I'm afraid I might win. And if I win, my life would be miserable. Like, I'm happy right now. If I win the Powerball, like, you know what kind of demands and everyone comes out of the woodwork and wants a piece of you? I don't want to deal with that. Like, there's a reason God didn't make me rich, because, like, he wants me to be happy. You know, I've seen what happens when people have a lot of money and everyone's after them for their money and they never know who's really their friend and who's... I don't need that. No, thanks. I'm pretty okay. So I was afraid I might... Yeah, you know, a Jew believes it's a 1 in 290 million chance. You believe you're going to be the winner. It's a 1 in 4 chance that if you're driving while texting, you're going to crash. But we believe, no, it's not going to happen to me. But a 1 in 290 million chance you're going to be the winner. So, but what Sean Aker discovered, and what all the research shows, is that it's backwards. That success doesn't breed happiness. Happiness breeds success. When you're happy, you're much more likely to be successful. If you read about it, there's a great book called The Happiness Advantage. It's a great yisodos. It's like my favorite Musar Sfarim, other than Aruch HaTzaddikim, my favorite Musar Sfarim are like these kinds of books. So Gladwell, like all these kinds of, I don't know if any, but the when you're happy, you're gonna ultimately be successful. How do you achieve happiness? Almost one thing is smile. If you smile, you're happy. You fake it till you make it. So one of my favorite studies. I shouldn't be talking about psychology the whole time because I'm not a psychologist, but it was just one more minute. One of my favorite studies was they took a pencil, they gave a whole room full of people a pencil, and they showed them a comedy movie. And they had half the people hold the pencil between their teeth like this, and half the people hold it in their lips like this. And then they asked them how funny they thought the movie was. And everyone who held the pencil like this thought the movie was hilarious. And anyone who held it like this thought it was annoying and stupid. And they realized, they were doing this on purpose, they realized if you're holding a pencil like this, you're smiling. Your face muscles are smiling already. Once you're smiling, the world is a better place. Everything's funny, everything's cute, everything's... When you're holding it, frowning. So, you know, when you're frowning, then everything's going to... But the other ikar of achieving happiness that they say, there are 7 ikarim, but one of the other ikarim of achieving happiness is gratitude. Hakara sato. Hakara sotov to everybody. Hakara sotov to parents. Hakara sotov to Rebbein. There's a teacher in DRS, Mr. Mark, who may or may not be related. They look exactly alike. So who's been like selling gratitude in DRS for years, and he's got to the point. He's successful enough where when I finish shiur every day, boys, high school boys, 11th grade boys, come over to me at the end of shiur and say, Rebbe, thank you very much. Which makes their whole day, makes my day a lot better, makes their whole day a lot better also. And it's an amazing thing. It's a good hanhaga. Don't come over to me after this year and say, thank you very much. Then it's just going to be like too weird. But, start it with other people. And it's just thank you very much to everybody who does anything. Who does any, the Gemara says, an oreach tov. The Gemara says, a lot of you, you're in Israel for the year, you end up being guests at people's house for a Shabbos meal, here and there. You know, we talk a lot about Achnasas Orach, and we talk very little about the other side, being the guest. So the Gemara says, according to Shulchan Aruch, according to Shabrulis, that an Oreach Ra, a bad guest, says, Ma tircha torach balabayis bishvili? What kind of tircha the balabayis do for me? He didn't go out of his way at all for me. He didn't really do anything for me. Because, he was making food anyway. So what? I had one piece of chicken? Yeshiva Bachman probably had more than one piece of chicken anyway. But, I had one piece of... Well, it wasn't anything extra. They kept on telling me. I said, can I bring a friend and another friend? They're like, yeah, no problem. So it wasn't a big deal. I see it wasn't a big deal for them. And that's what an Oreach Ra says. But an Oreach Tov says... Look how he went out of his way for me, that he gave me food and he gave me good conversation and he, took care of me and he looked out for what's best for me. Look, what a great host. That's what an Oreach Tov says. Essentially, an Oreach Tov has Hakara Sadov. And by the way, when people have guests, they cook differently than when they don't have guests. So it's not just that you're an Oreach Tov because you're reckoning. It's true. If they actually are doing things for you. As hard as it might be to believe, people make more food. You know, when you're home, that your parents, when they have a house full of company, all of a sudden, like, your mom becomes, like, the greatest gourmet chef in the world, and it's like, hey, how come last night was, like, chicken nuggets, But because that's what you do for guests. So that's a basic sense of Hakara Satov. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his infinite wisdom, and where he's merames to the idea of brachos in the Torah, certainly Rebbe in the Torah, Chazal, with their tremendous foresight, saw that if they set up a context where we're constantly expressing Hakaras HaTov, we're going to be better Ovdei Hashem. Because if we're constantly expressing Hakaras HaTov, we're going to be happy, we're going to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Hakaras HaTov to someone, when you express it to someone, you start to love them more, because you start to realize, since you're thinking about what they did for you, you start to realize what they do for you, and the more you think about it, the more you love them. So it sets up this tremendous infrastructure of Avas Hashem and of Avodas Hashem. Mea brachas b'chol yom. 100 brachas every day. That's a chiyuv, to make mea brachas b'chol yom. Why? So that would bring you to a certain level of the Ribbono Shel Olam. To say, to express that, but there's one catch. It doesn't always work. It only works if you actually pay attention to what you're saying. I can tell you that for most of my life, I didn't make brachos properly, and very rarely thought, and this is even after my rabbinic career started, not all rabbis are perfect, believe it or not. Didn't make brachos, but I wasn't even thinking about it. Whether it be Shemona Esrei, whether it be Berachos Hananin, try this. Not to have kavanah for every single word, it's impossible. It's very hard. Try this. When you say the name Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, just the word Hashem, in Shemona Esrei, think about Hashem for a second. You will then find that it will spill over into a lot of the other words also, because you're not going to say, okay, now I got to stop thinking about Hashem. You know, what's the best way for me to make you think about a pink elephant? Don't think about a pink elephant. Yeah, good luck, right? So once you start thinking about it, once the thought is in your head, it's that you're going to continue to think about it. You can continue to think about Hashem. You have to have kavanah. What changed? What inspired me to all of a sudden pay attention to brachos? I had Rav Shachter at my house for a Shabbos a few years ago, and it came time to bench. It took him like 10 minutes. It was like every word out loud, slowly. You know, certain times he was tearing up. Like everything was... And by the way, watch him, for those who are going to go to YU, watch him during Chazaras Hashatz. Or if he ever visits Torah Shragel, watch him during, it's the same during Chazaras Hashatz, and he's not even saying it. Kavanah in every single word. When you have kavanah, that builds the gratitude, that builds the happiness. You know, our practice, my practice at home, is we on Shabbos, we don't say the whole benching, we stop after Ali Chasreinu. So, my kids said, you know, can we do that? We'd rather say, as long as it takes, as long as you make sure that benching on Shabbos takes as long as it does during the week. Take as long to say until Aliyah Chasreinu as you do normally to bench the whole thing, and you could stop at Aliyah Chasreinu. So those are just, okay, I used most of my time in those two. So you'll say a little, right? A little bit of the topic. Those are the two thoughts about brachos. But Scott really said that we should do an interesting shayla, right? Alright, brachos and Sanhedrin. So I have an interesting shayla that relates to each one. Maybe I'll just tell you both shaylas and tell me which one to talk about. One of them I was talking about with one of the guys before, with a couple of the guys before. Here's a Sanhedrin-related shayla. I'll explain to you why it's Sanhedrin-related shayla later. The Sanhedrin-related shayla I got was from a high school kid. He was not a DRS boy. Because no DRS boys carry cell phones in class, that would be terrible. So it was someone who goes to a high school where some kids don't follow the rules. You can imagine. And there was a kid who left his cell phone on during class. And in the middle of class, the cell phone rang. And another kid in the class, let's say Shimon's cell phone rang. Reuven is sitting in class, and he heard Shimon's cell phone ring. And the teacher didn't know whose cell phone it was. The teacher said, whose cell phone was that? And it was about to confiscate the cell phone. So Reuven, knowing that Shimon was not his first offense and that he was already in big trouble with his parents, Reuven being a good friend, it's mine, take one for the team. First offense, he'll only lose it for 24 hours. So he lied, said it was his cell phone, and gave his cell phone. Then he felt guilty, and he thought, like a big tzaddik. Then he felt guilty about it afterwards. Did I do the right thing? To lie to the teacher in that way and give my cell phone up and claim that I'm the one that was guilty even though I wasn't guilty. Being a good, nice friend, but lying to the teacher. That relates to Masech Sanhedrin. I'll give you I don't think you're going to figure out. You probably didn't get to that Gemara yet. So that's Shaila number one. Shaila number two relates to Masech's Brachos. A few years ago, Rabbi Kamenetsky in DRS was giving shir to the fathers of on Friday mornings. He gives a parsha shir before davening to a lot of the fathers who come to his parsha shir. And that year it happened to be, I guess it must have been, Asar B'Teves fell on Friday. Right? So it was a fast day. And he was saying shir on Asar B'Teves. And his mouth got a little bit dry. So one of the people ran and got him a cup of water when his mouth got dry. And he was involved in the shir. Obviously the guy who got the water forgot that it was Asar B'Teves. Rabbi Kamenetsky picks up the cup of water. Oh, look at that. I have a cup of water. I have a prop. So he picks up a cup of water. He says loudly and proudly, "Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah B'Dvaro." It's a fast day, but he just said the bracha. So what does he do now? If you drink, you break the fast. If you don't drink, it's a bracha levatala. So those are the two shaykhs, the cell phone and that one. Which one do you want to talk about? I'm not going to have time for both, I don't think. Bracha? Right, this ends at 7, right? Okay, so the bracha one?
Yeah.
Everyone agree? Maskim?
Maskim.
Okay, so whenever you have a shayla halacha l'maisa, the first thing you have to think about is to spot what the issues are. To identify, where do I open up? Here's the Mishnah Berurah. Where do I open up? I want to find, it's not going to be in this volume, by the way, but where do I open up to find what the halacha is? What area of halacha am I looking at? So what am I looking at over here? Hilchos brachos. What about Hilchos bracha levatala? So one thing I need to know about is how bad is it to say a bracha levatala? I need to know how terrible an issur that is. What else do I need to know about? How terrible it is to break a fast. Good. Anything else that we may need to discover? So how many options does he have? One option is to drink it. Another option is not to drink it. What's the third option?
Say Baruch Shem.
Baruch Shem. Baruch Shem. So we also need to figure out about that. Baruch Shem. What is that? What's that Baruch Shem? And then Chakak is when you're halfway through the bracha. He said the whole bracha. So what is Baruch Shem for Matzol Yom Vet? Is it? It's an amazing thing. You can say Baruch Levatol, which is a machlokes with the Tznisa Darais or Tznisa Drabanan, and then just fix it by saying Baruch Shem for Matzol Yom Vet. If you turn on a light on Shabbos by accident, can you say, the cross of the Shabbos Oneg? And then, it makes it okay? Because you said something about Shabbos? You eat a cheeseburger and you're like, Lo Savash Gleeve Chalevimah. That doesn't work. What does Baruch Shem Kvam Achsel Levad do? I guess this also touches a little bit on the Brachas Tav and what the meaning of Brachas are. What's the problem of Brachas Levad? Yeah.
I was just saying, why it's not as bad as when you say the bracha is a positive thing. You're saying thank you to Hashem or something. Even if you don't necessarily want to then drink that water, you're still
excellent.
A positive thing.
There is a machlokas rishonim. If you say a full bracha, but you're just not using that bracha. God actually did create fruits of the tree. So I can say right now, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Borei Pri Ha'etz. And it's all true, and I believe it, and I'm thanking God for doing that. I just happen to not be eating an apple right now. So some Rishonim say, Issur D'Oraisa, because you said Hashem's name in vain. Other Rishonim say exactly your point. Rov Rishonim say exactly your point. That's not an Issur D'Oraisa of taking God's name in vain. Because it's not in vain. It was a full sentence that made total sense and that expressed gratitude to God. So that's not in vain. That's not a violation of taking God's name in vain. But even those who shouldn't say it's asur midrabanan, that we're not allowed to.
That's why. But that's why maybe it's not as you can say about shame, and then it's in certain cases isn't as bad because it's not like you're going. You're not eating a cheeseburger or breaking Shabbat. You're saying something that is true, positive, but it is using Hashem's name because you're not eating that specific.
Right. So it's not as bad because it's only drabanan. So you say, look, by other yisurim drabanan. Let's say I'm having a chicken cheeseburger. It's also an isur drabanan. So can I say Lo Savash? Meaning we don't have this by any other isur drabanan or daraisa. Very good. I miss you also. So, very good. By saying Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Levad, what are you saying? Meaning, when you say Baruch Levatal, what's the terrible violation? The terrible violation is that you dishonored Hashem. That you just said His name for no reason. You dishonored Hashem. So as a way of showing, like, no offense, God, you say Baruch Shem Kol Machzor Levad. Does it fix the Baruch Levatal? No, but it's an appropriate thing to do as a way of sort of like rebuilding the relationship that I didn't really mean to dishonor the name of God, so I'm going to show a little bit of extra honor. That's a Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Leolad, that the Kavod Malchus, I'm giving honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it doesn't really fix the Aveda. So Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Leolad is not the best solution. It doesn't really solve all the problems. It just, you know, takes a little bit of the edge off of the Aveda. Excellent.
You have to make it on any amount. So you make the bracha, drink less than a shear.
Very good. So that we have to consider when it comes to fasting, is the fasting, what would be considered a breaking of the fast? You know, we know by certainly on Yom Kippur, let's say, if a person is very ill and they're not able to fast the whole day, so what do we tell them? Pachas mikashir. Little shot glasses of water or of liquid. Nice catch, thanks. Have little shot glasses of liquid, and like little tam tam crackers or thin wheats or something like that every 10 minutes, every 9 minutes, every 8 minutes, depending on sick there. So maybe less than a shear is a good way to good. Rav Avadia Yosef has a tshuva not about this topic, about making a bracha on a fast day, but about a very similar topic. Rav Avadia Yosef talks about. You ate a fleishig lunch. Very common here in Israel. That the main meal of the day is lunchtime. Right? So you can't have your afternoon coffee with milk because you ate a fleishig lunch. You can't eat chocolate, you know, the good kind, during the afternoon because the main meal is lunch. And you ate a fleishig meal at lunch. And you wait 6 hours because you're passing like the Shulchan Aruch, so you wait 6 hours... After eating fleishigs, but you've only, it's 2 hours after lunch, 3 hours after lunch, and you have your pesach zman, and you say baruch, well, whatever bracha it is, yeah, you have your whatever your pure chocolate, and you say it's also machlokes what bracha it is, but let's say it's milk chocolate, so much sugar that it's obvious that it's shahakol, so you say shahakol niyabedvaro, and then you're about to eat and you realize hey, I'm fleishigs. So Rav Avadia Yosef discusses, what's the halacha over there? Do you eat it? Do you not eat it? So he has to have a similar discussion, not about a fast day, but about how bad it is to have milchigs after fleishigs. What kind of violation that is. And if it's as bad as bracha levatala. So let's you know anything about that? How bad is that? What's the yisud d'oraisa with milchigs and fleishigs? What? Cooking it together and eating that which was cooked together is also nisud d'oraisa. Getting hana from that which was cooked together is also nisud d'oraisa. So, if the cheese was cooked onto the burger, that's nisud d'oraisa bas v'chalav. Eating one after the other, not a nisud d'oraisa. So why do we wait? Why don't we just have one right after the other? Where does that come from? And you know all these different minhagim. I get emails all the time. People ask all different kinds of questions. Just got two last week about the same thing. One person was asking me about that the family minhag was to wait 3 hours, but then he asked his grandfather. Father's minhag was to wait 3 hours, but he asked his grandfather. Grandfather said 6 hours. Our family we always waited 6 hours. I don't know what your father's talking about. And the father's like, yeah, but 3 hours seemed easier. And like, I know a lot of religious people that do it. So like, what does he keep? Does he keep his father's minhag or his grandfather's minhag? You know, like. There are all these minhagim. There's 3 hours, there's 6 hours, into the sixth, 5 and a half, you know, all of these. Some 1 hour, if a girl is lucky, that's what the girls talk about in seminaries. If you're lucky enough to marry a Dutch Jew, those guys are very in demand, because then the girl gets to only wait 1 hour for the rest of her life. So that's like a big deal. And especially if he doesn't have an awful last name. So that's very exciting. So where do all these minhagim come from? So the Gemara says, Maseches Chulin, that if a person, Gemara says, one of the Amoraim commented, that I'm like vinegar, the son of wine, in comparison to my father. My father, oh, he was such a tzaddik. When he would eat fleishigs, he wouldn't eat milchigs for 24 hours. I just wait misuda l'suda, from one meal to the next meal. So I'm not as frum as my father. So the Gemara says, okay, apparently you're supposed to wait from one meal to the next meal. Oh, that's mine. Someone's calling me. It's okay now. It's also apparent. You don't have to get it. It's also apparent that it's appropriate to have chumras in this area when you're ready for such chumras. The Bali Musar points out that if his father was such a great man because he waited 24 hours, why didn't the son also just wait 24 hours? Meaning, simple solution, right? Wait 24 hours and you'll be like your father. Instead of lamenting, oh, it's terrible, I'm not like my father. My father davens and I don't. So daven, and then you'll be like your father. Meaning, what? So the Bali Musar point out that no, what he was saying was that when it comes to chumras, a chumra doesn't make sense for everybody. Rabbi Balsam told me that in parent-teacher conferences once, and I apologize to anybody here if this might have been your father, he said in parent-teacher conferences once, a father came in and said, you know, I keep a bag packed for Mashiach. In case Mashiach comes any minute. Rabbi Balsam was like, that's insane. You're not the Chafetz Chaim. You know, that makes sense for the Chafetz Chaim, which, by the way, the Chafetz Chaim's granddaughter says that she, totally not true. There's no way he could afford extra clothing to keep in a bag that he wasn't wearing. He was dirt poor. There's no way. That whole story's not true. But it would make sense for the Chafetz Chaim to keep a backpack. But a chumrah doesn't make sense for everybody. So that's what he was lamenting. I'm a person who such a chumrah doesn't make sense for. I wish I was the kind of person that this chumrah made sense for. Remember Moshe Tversky, Zichron Levracha, Hashem Yikom Damo? You heard that all these things about what this tzaddik did, his son Huggos, the way he behaved. The way Rameir Tversky Shlita described it was, he kept every chumrah in the book and many that were in nobody's book. But it never seemed unnatural, because that's who he was. And it makes sense when that's who you are. But if you're not that, then it doesn't make sense. And that's what he was really lamenting. Anyway, so the Gemara seems to say that you're supposed to wait from one meal to another. Then it's just a question of definition. How do you define one meal to the other? So Shulchan Aruch, certainly Rav Gvadia, according to Maran Beit Yosef, it's got to be 6 hours. We Paskin Ashkenazim, Paskin Mikra Adin, it's 1 hour, but we're knowing 6 hours. And Yekis, Paskin 3 hours. Why? It doesn't say that anywhere in Shulchan Aruch, and pretty much doesn't say it anywhere in Rishonim. So I asked Rav Shachter about that once. He says he's lived in Washington Heights for long enough to know that Yekis believe that Der Minhagim are older than the Shulchan Aruch and older than Kabbalah Satori. Whatever Der Minhagim are, you can't question Der Minhagim. Okay, so they have such a tradition. But it's at most in Issa D'Rabbanan. And therefore, it seems, Bracha Levatol is an Issa D'Rabbanan. Eating on a fast day, or having a little bit on a fast day, certainly on a Sarbat day, is an Issa D'Rabbanan. So what do you do? Or eating the milk after Issa D'Rabbanan. So what do you do? I'm either way I turn now, I'm violating Issa D'Rabbanan. So no? Well, now what? We're trying to find, if one's a Daraisa, one's a D'Rabbanan, great. So then I'll violate the D'Rabbanan, not the Daraisa. They're both going to be an Issa D'Rabbanan. So what do you do? Whenever you're in doubt, what do you do? What do you think? No thoughts?
The
what? Asay is docha lo sasay. That's when there's a conflict between the mitzvah and the mitzvah lo sasay. The only way to fulfill the asay, but over here there's no mitzvah sasay. They're both lo sasays. And it's a question which one you're going to violate. So generally speaking, we assume shev yal tasa adif. The bracha you already said. So just don't do anything. Shev yal tasa adif. However, all of the posts can point out that even though eating on a fast day is only nisid rabbanon, it was like a spoiler alert. It was you that said it with the less than a shir. So even though it's only nisid rabbanon, when you're having less than a shir, just the ti'ima, that's a lower level nisid rabbanon. You're not supposed to be tamei on a fast day, just to have a little bit on a fast day, even pachas mikshir on a fast day. But it's even a lower level nisid rabbanon. And therefore, Rav Vadya writes, I believe, in the end of that tshuva, I didn't print out so well, so I can't see 100% in the, I tried to print out, but Rav Vadya writes in the end of that tshuva, to eat a kol shehu. And Rabbi Kamenetsky, on that day, when he came over to me during Chazaras HaShas, he doesn't talk at all during davening, so he had written down the shayla, and he said, had an interesting shayla this morning, made bracha on water, you know, so I went over to him afterwards, and said, what did you do? So, because he didn't have time to ask the shayla, obviously, when he was doing it, as if he needs to ask me his shayla, it was ridiculous in the first place. But I said, what did you do? So he said, I was towing kolshu, I had a little bit. So, Baruch Shekivanta, he did exactly like what Rav Avadya passes. So that, I think, is the correct halach in this case. Okay, thank you for your patience, for coming to the shiur. See you at Slach, everyone.
Anyone who has